And we are back, and we are the Run Duo. I am Tommy.
What's up, y'all? It's India. What's up, good people?
What's up? What's up?
Nothing much. It is Olympic Marathon Trials Week. I'm so excited. I don't know about you, Tommy, but I'm excited. I have my calendar set for Saturday. I am ready to go.
I am excited. I cannot wait to see people running through the streets of my hometown. I want to see how it goes. But yes, mm-hmm. I'm excited as well.
Yes, definitely, definitely excited. And we are going to have a guest on to our show today. So we are excited to have them. But I just want to plug in and just let y'all know, don't forget to tune in to the trials. You can watch it on Peacock on Saturday at 10 o'clock. If you have Peacock, you can do that 10 a.m. And if you don't have Peacock, you can also check into NBC. They are doing a tape. They're going to tape it, and it will be broadcast at noon on NBC on Saturday. So definitely do what you need to do. Peacock or NBC this weekend. Definitely look out for the Marathon Olympic Trials that will be taking place. Of course, you know, Tommy and I are super excited because in 2020, it was here in Atlanta, and we got to see it in person, and we were super, you know, just really, really hyped to be able to see that. So we're looking forward to what's happening this weekend.
And there may be some changing of the guard, especially on the men's side. You know, Galen Rupp is going to be there, but, you know, there's some young guys nipping at his heels. So I'll be interested to see how the men's side goes.
Yes, there's plenty of young guys that are nipping at the heels. So that's really exciting. And I wanted to give, before we bring our guests on, I want to give a big shout out to Amelia M. Benton. She is a journalist and a writer that always does very well with amplifying the voices and talents of people of color. And she wrote an article that's in the Women's Running magazine. And she talked about how for the Marathon Olympic Trials, this is the biggest field of women of color. So this year it is 12% women of color, which is amazing. I don't know about you, Tommy. Remember in 2020, we were trying to find, like, we were searching for people, women of color. Like, of course, there were more than what we knew, but, you know, but for us, we were really searching. And that was when we had Peyton Thomas on and got to know her story. Nathan Martin, both of those people that I just named have been on our podcast, and they will be back at the trials this weekend. But just to give you a heads up, if you're interested in reading an article, she gave some details on the 12% of the ladies that are women of color that will be running the Marathon Olympic Trials. And again, that's on the Women's Running website. Definitely go check that out. Big kudos. Of course, the field for women is smaller this year than it was in 2020, but we make up 12% of that field. So I think that is amazing. And hopefully we can get some of those guests on to hear their story for running the Marathon Olympic Trials.
I'm with you. I'm definitely with you. So you ready to bring him on?
I am ready. Here's our guest.
All right. Here he comes.
All right. What's up, good people? Welcome back. This is, I want to say, our first episode of 2024. Or is it our second, Tommy?
I think it's our second. I think it's the first one where we got somebody on with us.
Interviewee is on, and we are so excited to have this guest on today. Now, you may have heard this man's voice on episode 111 of the Run Duo podcast. We have Coach Dwayne Scott in the building. What's up?
Back.
Yes, Atlanta running coach as well as ultra marathoner. He is Atlanta based here with us. He is one of our really good friends. And Dwayne Scott, we are so happy to have you on the podcast. Welcome back.
Yes, indeed.
Well, thank you so much. I'm happy to be back. Again, it's an honor. Thank you both again. I will always thank you so much. And I'm very happy to be on the show and do whatever I can to support both of you guys. You're incredible. Love both of you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Listen, so as I was explaining before we started recording, I had a little brief moment where I opened up my Instagram and I saw that you ran you were running in Brazil. Not only were you running in Brazil, but you ran the Brazil 135 Ultra Journey. And we're excited to have you on today to talk all about it.
Yes, I have stories. I have a lot.
Okay.
I have lots.
Okay. We are here for it. Well, you know, typically I know that you are a little bit more low key in regards to announcing where you're going to be, what you're going to be doing, what races you're running, but we will see you out there and doing your thing. And just so happened for this round, you popped up and was like, hey y'all, I told y'all 2024 was going to be great. I am in Brazil and we're running an ultra marathon. So before we get into the nitty gritty, and I know Tommy has some things he definitely wants to ask as well, but before we get into the nitty gritty, how did you find out about the Brazil 135? And tell us a little bit about the race in general.
Okay. So I found out about the race through a fellow running peer, Aisha Jordan Johnson. She is a ultra marathoner, first Black woman to grace the cover of Ultra Magazine in its 42-year history. Found out through her that this race was taking place. But it was, I'll just say that I'm such a rookie and new in at this distance. It was a possibility that I might not have been able to get into the race because my ultra marathon resume is not as long as my fellow ultra marathoners. So I found out through her that I had the potential to get into the race, but it was predicated on me completing a ultra marathon at 100-mile distance before being allowed entry. So the last time I was on the show, I made an attempt at 100 miles. And I got to the 89-mile distance and I fell back into a category of, hey, you need, I did 89 miles in 36 hours. Mm-hmm. So I found out about another, and so this was this September 2023, I found out about another ultra marathon in Pensacola, Florida, which was 100 miles. And based off being successful in that race, then the race director would allow me to enter Brazil 135. So I had to pay some dues. Okay.
Right.
So if I had not made, if I did not complete that 100-mile marathon, ultra marathon, I would not have been allowed to enter Brazil 135.
Wow. So you actually had to complete that race, like get to the mileage in order to even get into the Brazil 135.
Yes. Yes. And on the website, the race director discretion, I mean, it is like, hey, you didn't get it. So here's a refund, you know, good luck next time. Right. So it was predicated on me completing that ultra marathon, in Pensacola, Florida. That's the, what was it? I'm drawing a blank now. All of a sudden, Wildcat 100.
Okay. So, okay.
Completed that ultra marathon. Then, after a series of meetings with the race director, you get a blessing, and you can enter the race. So, as a result of that, then I was able to enter Brazil 135, and you know, the rest is very interesting history after that.
All right. Well, listen, that sounds like a lot. So you basically had to pay your dues in order to get into this ultra marathon.
A couple of months, you like basically, you know, oh, I missed on this 100, but they got one next week, so let me try that 100 next week. I mean,
I was just about to ask that, Tommy. So basically, you said that was in September, and if I'm thinking about it right, unless you did a little post delay on Instagram, you went from September to December on doing to January on doing the marathon, the 135. Is that correct? Yeah.
That is absolutely correct. Yes. Yes. And so I'm thinking, okay, so I'm thinking 135. So I just did 100 miles. I'm like, okay, 35 more miles. I don't know. So the race director, Comandante Mario Lacerda, basically gives us a website where we can download the GPX to our watch. So I download the map. And it's 144 miles versus 135 miles.
And well, you know, Dwayne, when I was looking at your Instagram, I was like, okay, the race, and I looked into the race. I said, the race is 135, but he's talking about 144. How did we get from 135 to 144?
Yeah, so what happened was one of the landowners down there decided that he got a little bit tired of racers going through his property. So they had to alter the course. And so this was the first year out of the, so next year will be 20 years, out of this 19-year history that they had to alter the course a little bit. And, well, a lot of bit, tell you the truth. And then we had to do the distance. So advertised 135 miles, but technically 144 miles till you get to the finish line. So it started out, let me get my cliff notes. It started out in a city called Aguas de Prata. And it finished in a city called Persepolis. It was a point to point, yes. So started on January 11th and finished in on January 13th. You had 60 hours. You had 60 hours to complete the race. No poles, no Trek poles below the age of 65. So if you're 65 years old and younger, you could not use poles for the elevation that was about to be thrown at us. If you were 65 and older, you could use poles. And then also the older runners got a head start. They started before we did, and they could finish the race in 74 hours. So yeah, there was no poles, a lot of elevation, and 60 hours to do. And I have stats too. I have a little bit of numbers. So we are based here in the Atlanta metropolitan area, hills, Stone Mountain. So Stone Mountain at its highest is 1,686 feet. The highest point in this race is 5,377 feet. So that's like three Stone Mountains.
Wow.
On one part of the race. That's the highest I've ever gone in my whole entire life. I made sure I took photos and took a deep breath and kept it pushing after that. But I was surrounded by a very terrific crew, a very good crew chief, our team lead, Aisha. She unfortunately had some personal situation happen, so she was not able to come to Brazil and attend the race. But she always told us along the journey to complete the race. So it was six guys. No one knew each other. Our team lead was like, hey, go forth and conquer. Two runners, myself and another runner named Lucien Boulet. If you get him on here too, he has a very good ultra marathon resume. He is primarily out of Florida, has done a lot of races. And has really moved the needle in terms of diverse trail running at the 100-mile distance and higher, okay? And just to give some history about the race, so this race is a sister race to a race that happens here in the United States, the Badwater 135 race, which is the hardest. It takes place in the desert, and it's a very hard race. And this is a sister race that was started from that race that takes place in Brazil. Okay. So, yeah.
And you said that it was how many participants? You said six participants total.
So in our crew, our team.
Okay.
I was a runner, and Lucien Boulet is a runner. We had a crew chief. His name is Marcelo Bo. And we had. Under him, we had two cars. And so each car was assigned to a runner. I had a car and Lucien had a car. And they would follow us. So instead of having aid stations along the course, the car would really follow you while you were on the course.
Oh, okay.
So at night, it was well lit. You had your, it's like a mobile aid station. Now, it wasn't always like that. There's certain places the car could not go. But a good majority of the race, you always had your support team following you on the course. So you had your food, you had whatever, your water, change of clothes, whatever you need following you. And so in each car, there was a driver and a pacer. So you had a pacer that if you needed a pacer in certain parts of the race, you could lean on your pacer to help you get through it. And it was, we just, whatever food that we could get, we had it in the car and we would run the route with the car following right behind us. So
it was, wow.
It was a very challenging race in terms of elevation, in terms of being technical. You know, you had roots, rocks, mud, clay. January typically is rainy season in Brazil, and we did get rained on. But it, when it's hot, it's hot. But when it's not, it's not. And so Brazil is 2 hours, and there's a time difference too. Brazil is 2 hours ahead of Eastern Standard Time, also FYI too. But it was a very interesting race, very challenging, soul-searching race that does change you along the way. And, you know, with any distance, you have to find reason and why you're doing something, right? Especially when you move past the, you know, okay, I'm getting new into this running thing and I got a medal and it's great. You know, after a while, you need to find more reasons for why you're doing what you're doing. And this race definitely challenged myself and Lucian. And FYI, we did make history on the race site. Lucian is the first African American to finish the race.
Okay.
I am the second African American to finish the race. Okay. So that has never happened before. And it's a very exclusive race. I mean, it's very family oriented, you know, predicated on, hey, you know, it's not about just if you can pay to enter the race. It's about if you're a good fit and making sure that you're safe in terms of being able to complete the distance. So I have to tip my hat to the race director for that, because safety is very much paramount for this race. So it's very,
well,
very-
I want to stop you there and give you your kudos. Congratulations on making history. That is amazing, amazing, mm-hmm. amazing that you're out here doing this, making history, putting a stamp in it, and obviously spreading diversity in doing so. Yeah.
Yes.
Definitely. That is really awesome. Now, typically, so of course, you know, me and Tommy don't do ultras, but we know, you know, we do know a little bit about ultra marathoning. So typically, your traditional ultra, there will be, like you mentioned, crew chiefs or kind of like a team that will be there that will make sure that you're good. Have your food and everything on the side. Now, it sounds like you were assigned. How did you obtain the crew that you had? Is it a part of the registration process or how was that done? And then also in the midst of that, the food that you ate, did you have to find Brazilian food and like make sure that you could acclimate to their food in order to do that? Like, how did that work?
Okay. So, our team lead, Aisha, she coordinated with the race director, and the race director assigned us a crew chief.
Okay.
So Marcelo Bo was our crew chief, who is he's a runner and he's a chef. We'll come back to that one. and a very, very good chef, by the way. And he worked out getting a crew assigned to each one of the runners. So it was done through the race. The race that it wasn't like, you know, okay, who
can I get? Yeah,
you didn't have to like tell your homeboy, I need you to come to Brazil for the next 4 days,
exactly.
And help a brother out. I know you ain't been to Brazil, but I need you to be there.
It was well coordinated. So the international runners, I mean, there were runners from Italy, Poland, France, Spain. So those runners were assigned. Either they were, you know, they were ballerific and they could bring their team with them, or the race director helped coordinate some local runners. The trail running community in Brazil is, they are passionate about it. So there's a group called Ultra Deja, and there's another group down there that's called the Off-Road Runners. And they are very, very passionate about trail running and getting out and being outdoors and just being free and just being a part of the environment. So between that love for community, we didn't have a problem with you know, our environment or being assigned a crew chief to help do our thing. I mean, and just to add to that, so Lucian's team, we, you know, everybody was bilingual, okay? But in Lucian's case, the driver was bilingual, could speak English and Portuguese. His pacer could only speak Portuguese. So he was out. And so when you pace, it's like, okay, you have a language barrier and you're like trying to coordinate what we're going to do. And there was a total language barrier. So I have to commend Lucian and his pacer, Paulo Farina, who they worked it out and they
a lot of hand gestures, a lot of
it was like stop, go,
hand it was like time out, like let's go.
That's a universal sign for everything's okay. So they worked it out and I have to commend their team and because of the mandate from our team, you know, our team lead, we pretty much were like somebody. I mean, it's just too far not to finish, right? You just can't, you know, you just can't go all the way to Brazil and just not be successful, right? So we had that at hand. You know, there's a lot of costs there, right? It wasn't like this is a thing, right? A cheap flight or, you know, but it was a lot of logistics and making sure that we were successful in finishing the race. We did it for our team lead and we made sure that we were successful and we finished the, both of us finished the race. I mean, it was a lovely time. And then, you know, back to our crew chief, Marcelo, he's a very passionate runner, in the Brazilian community. He does fundraisers. He raises money for kids. He, collects used shoes, and basically distributes used shoes, to people who can't afford, shoes so they can run trail. He's a coach. He's a chef. He cooked our food. With food, we had cooked food that he cooked. And then we also, you know, we had enough room in our luggage where we could bring some stuff, right? So the key, and, you know, typically when you travel, right, this is kind of like race 101, always wear your race clothes under your clothes. Always have your
just in case.
Just in case your bags get lost, right? You can still participate in some form or fashion. So we had that to work through. So luckily no bags
get lost. Oh, I was about to say, what?
Yeah, no bags got lost in this production. So
that's my biggest fear when I travel internationally, like my bags get lost.
Yeah. You were like, you know what I'm saying? So that worked out lovely. We, you know, our Marcelo, he cooked our food. We had, Brazilian barbecue is just
Me and Tommy.
That sounds good.
Yeah,
I cannot do it justice.
Like true Brazilian barbecue. You know they got Brazilian barbecue in Atlanta, but it is not.
It's not the real deal.
Yeah, no.
It's not the real deal here, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, if you get a taste of it, you'd be like, "I'm not going back." I'm fan. Okay, so. We did the race. We had Airbnb. Marcelo's our chef. He cooked for us. We had Brazilian barbecue. It was a very, you know, there in along the race there's high points and low points along the way. You know, Lucian and I were trying to stay shoulder to shoulder, but it's very hard. So eventually someone's going to take the lead, be a rabbit. Someone's going to take the lead and be a rabbit. So we did this back and forth for quite some time. And then, you know, running that long, you will hallucinate, ladies and gentlemen. Okay. Mm-hmm. You will see things that you would think, okay, what was that? So my hallucinations ranged from somebody sitting by the side of the trail wearing a green outfit to a woman sitting in a lawn chair, right? I mean, you see, your mind does things weird when you get sleepy and you've been running for a long period of time.
I bet.
It was very insightful. I think one of the most entertaining points for me was I don't know if you saw the video. I have to send it to you. I got followed by a horse.
Right? Saw that. I was just about to say, well, you didn't hallucinate that horse that I saw in that video.
That horse was very, very real. So there was a part in the course where I'm running and there was a farm off to my right. And I'm like, wow, they got horses. There's no fence. That's great. Next thing you know, this white horse looks at me and I'm looking at him. So he just comes off the farm and starts following me down the trail. I'm like, well, he's not leaving, so I might as well get him on tape. Right? I'm having a casual conversation and we were coming up to a checkpoint. And for a brief moment, I did think about, maybe if I just get on this horse and
just a little bit. Get on time.
Get me down here a little bit.
just a little bit. So I did think about that for a second, but eventually, I guess he's looking for food. He just stopped following me after a while. And then I just kept going on. But it, so the first couple of miles, you know, we had to do a few zigzags to accommodate the course change. Mostly a lot of elevation, a lot of technical rocks. I mean, it was hard going uphill and downhill. Mm-hmm. Coach India, when I tell you I had to use every trick in the book, okay? First you have your traditional run uphill. I'm zigzagging, I'm snaking uphill. I'm walking backwards uphill just to distribute the load, right? And then on top of that, downhill, you could catch it. The downhills were severe downhills. It wasn't like a gradual downhill.
Right.
So you have to run that a certain kind of way just to.
Yeah. So you don't eat up your toes and your quads and everything. Yeah.
Exactly. Out of this, I came out with like two blisters, some feet numbness. I got heat rash but other than that, I was able to complete. I did have bad cramp. I did cramp. I did have a cramp moment. But you know, my crew chief was there. I laid out on the ground. He had a roller. He rolled the cramps out, and then I was back in business again. So, the mobile aid station versus just you just running on this course, and you'll see if you can get back to civilization. You always have a safety net, and that's something that really attracted me to this race. It's a mentally tough, hard race. It is, you have to find something to hold on to. And typically when I do races this long, my son, he gave me it's kind of like a keychain with like a Superman on it. So I always have to have something that reminds you of why, what you got to get to. It's not just about the bling or the buckle. You have to get to what your true end game is for the race.
Well, you know, I was going to ask you that because earlier you insinuated that you do have to know your why, especially going into ultras and especially ultras of this distance and with the different terrain. Would you say that your son is your why, or what do you feel like, what did you hold on to, or what was your why through this race?
So for me, my why was getting back to civilization. That was primary goal one. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Two is it's a test of can I, you know, what are my limits? What am I limited to? Right. And for me, being a coach, you know, it adds credibility to me being able to coach someone at the 150 mile distance down. I can coach you. I know what you're going to go through and what type of training, you know, you're going to experience for different miles that you were trying to cover. So that's more of my why for doing this. I, you know, ultra is for me is like eating chocolate cake that your grandmother made, right? If you can eat it, it's really good, but you can get addicted to it. And you have to have, if you embrace it, you really will embrace it. Okay. It is a lot of people get turned off by the distance. So you have to fall back into the trick of you have to break it up in segments. Okay. I just did 5 miles. Okay. I'm at mile 10. Don't look at the whole picture. You'll psych yourself out if you do that. You have to break it up in chunks. And then eventually you're going across the finish line, right? You're finished. There's no more running. I mean, this is it, right? So that incentive of just testing my limits, having credibility in terms of being a coach, and also seeing what I can do to challenge my athletic, you know, mindset. That's what drives me to be, to do these distances, you know, and do different things. And then on top of that too, making sure that we have a diversity at all levels, right? It doesn't take you long. If you look at YouTube and start looking at trail and ultra, just look at that finish line. Just look at that finish line. So it's, you know, I've said it before, you know, Black folks, and I'm talking to Black folks here, okay? We have covered 5Ks, 10Ks, the marathon distance, right? But when it starts to get into ultra, it starts to get a little thin, okay? So other diverse groups, you know, indigenous, red, black, pink, whatever, need to show up and show out at these ultra distances, because it's important to show representation at these distances. It's very key that we can cover those distances. And if you look at it too, ultra, if you look at it, it is close to its purest form of running, right? There's no, when you start doing, you know, not, you know, we're all one percenters here, right? We're marathoners, right? Mm-hmm. It's very specific, right? You have your aid stations, you have your course, there's no deviation, start to finish. You know, there's a lot of, you know, everything's taken care of for you. But ultra, there's a lot of X factors, right? And it's you versus the course, but you versus you, because you have to stay in your own thoughts for a very long period of time, right? You never have to internalize too much on a marathon, right? You there is some internalization, right? But when you're really out there in the woods or on a trail and you're like, wow, there's no, am I going to make it? Am I not going to make it? How do I even get back to civilization, et cetera, et cetera? I mean, for this race, for example, at the expo, so you're given your bib, you're taking you were allowed to take a photo. And then one other thing that they gave us was they gave us a cane pole.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
So that was because in the previous year of the race, let's just say the dogs got a little too aggressive at night. Okay. So the dogs would lie in wait for the runners to come through and then give them a hard time. So you were given the option of you can carry a self-defense item, or you can just, you know, go along. So I only had two experiences. Well, really one. I had one experience where I ran through a town. A dog got a little too close. I just took my water bottle and just squirted some water at him. And then that was it. I didn't have to get, you know, I didn't have to carry lethal force. Right. Mm-hmm. But that sugar cane pole was for people who, you know, want to carry something if they felt a little uncomfortable.
So yeah, I was wondering. I saw the picture that I was like, did they give him the sugar cane for him to eat along the way? Like, he's supposed to husk this and chew on it while he's running? I mean, I'm sure sugar cane would be good for you in an ultra. But I wanted to go back to, you know, you talked about the diversity in, you know, ultras, which I completely understand why. Because first, no matter what color you are, it takes a special person to run an ultra. Mainly for what you just said, because just a lot of time, you know, with 5Ks and 10Ks, marathons, half marathons, I don't want to say it's a show, but it's a lot going on. You got other people out there, they got cheer squads. If it's a well-done race, ultras, you might not have all of that.
Yeah.
And now you're the only minority out here with all these other people that are special to run these things. So I see why it's hard to get people of color.
Yes.
You know, to get beyond that marathon.
Yes. You are your coach, fan, spectator, athlete, all in one. And, you know, it wasn't like there was like droves of people on the route. I mean, I saw some people there on the route. They gave me, you know, there's people, they gave me free ice water and bottled water along the route. They knew what we were doing. So you get some support, but it's just not a lot where you can zone out and not internalize. I mean, you really do some soul searching. And again, like to your point, not to negate that distance, because every distance is a soul searching thing, depending on where you are in your running journey. It just really starts to internalize. You know, I say if you're an introvert, you probably have a pretty good chance of being successful at ultra, right? But you have to internalize and just figure out why you're doing it, your reasoning. My reasoning is, my primary reason is getting out here and making sure that I show that this is diverse. And I was never really worried, right? So if you know the history of Brazil, you know that despite the hue of human that you're dealing that's Brazilian, they have African DNA. Brazilians are African, okay? It's just, that's, so I was amongst my people. I was never worried, right? So you always have, and I'll post, you know, you always have a travel advisory, Americans be safe, da, da, da.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you know where you're going, you know, there's places you can go.
And there's places you don't need to go. Yeah.
You don't need to go. You don't even know. So we avoided those spots and we were around some very good people that had very good hearts. And in Brazil, it's very laid back. They are very laid back people. They don't have time to be all worked up. And it's about living life, culture, food. I mean, even one point in the course, I ran through a carnival. I mean, they were just out there. Music was playing. And I'm out there. And this was at night. They had a full-fledged carnival in one of the towns I ran through. And I was like, dang, I want to kick it too, right? But I had to press on, you know, no rest for the weary, right? And get to where we could finish the race in time span of 60 hours. So I finished in 59 hours and 36. Exactly. I was cutting it close, ladies and gentlemen.
With that, like, so you transitioned from running your 100-miler and trying and getting into this race, and of course, I'm probably sure a little bit more distance. You were trying to think about in your mind. You were like, "How can I add this 35 miles, which turned into 44 additional miles over the 100?" What did you do differently? Did you do anything differently in your training between September and January to kind of cover that? And what was the average pace that you needed to keep in order to pump out that 60 hours? Because you wanted to finish. You didn't want to go all the way to Brazil and not finish the race. But I also know that you're a coach, so you calculated down to the T. But what are those details?
So training-wise, so since, you know, Atlanta is a very hilly type place. So I started doing hill repeats. I would take a heavy pack, right? And start doing hill repeats so I could start getting used to going uphill. Once we had the elevation, I was like, okay, this is not I need to practice going uphill and make sure that I do a lot of hill repeat type training. So pace-wise, it wasn't like I would do a mix of zone two, which is probably, for my case, around 10 to 11 minutes per mile pace to stay in zone two. I'll say an ultra, an 8-minute and some change pace is pretty fast, okay, if it's a technical trail.
Right, of course.
I did a lot of zone two aerobic, a lot of time on my feet. I would pretty much either go up Stone Mountain or around Stone Mountain. Stone Mountain, if you loop Stone Mountain, is 5 miles. So I would do repeats around Stone Mountain, and then I would use going up Stone Mountain as a way of, Stone Mountain's like 1 mile up. I would do hill repeats going up Stone Mountain or either various parts of the course to start to have time on feet. And then also, you know, I would run trail at Stone Mountain. A lot of people don't realize that there are trails. There are trails at Stone Mountain. There's lakes at Stone Mountain. You can loop lakes, right? So I was doing a lot of trail running out there around the course to get used to the various technical, because I didn't know. All I could look at was old videos of previous people who participated in the race to see. Last year's race was very muddy. So I was planning on like, okay, we're going to get wet. It's going to be very muddy. This year, it was a very hot, humid. I mean, in the morning, it can be like 70 to 80 degrees at like 7 o'clock in the morning, right? So a lot of heat for this race, I would say hill repeats and a lot of heat training in order to get used to the heat to be able to keep going. So my best pace was like 10 minutes and 35, but you can do like a 17 minute to 20 minute mile pace, which is a good walk, right? I would speed walk, you know, I would run where I could run. And then when I couldn't, I definitely would walk. I would take my time to try to keep my heart rate down because it was hot. When it's hot, your heart rate elevates. So you have to stay cool. I wore a bandana that had ice in it. So you have to look at where you're cooling in terms of like, so you have two major, you know, jugular veins in your neck. You want to keep that cool because it's going to go down to your heart. So if you can keep your left ventricle cool, I'm giving out freebies. You keep your left ventricle cool on your heart and you keep your neck cool. And then you have shade. I had multiple hats. I had a Legionnaire hat, you know, with the cape that drapes down. Mm-hmm. And so you keep the sun off of your neck so your blood flow can stay cool, right? And then you do, you know, you wear long sleeves to keep the sun off of you as much as possible, loose clothing, nothing tight. And then you can proceed on from there. So I just got used to training in the heat, did hill repeats, and just getting my legs used to going up hills. I don't have 5,000 feet of elevation to play with or incline. One thing you can do is if you get on a treadmill, you can incline it the most that it can go and get it that way. Or you can do a Stairmaster, which is good too, right? Mm-hmm. You can kind of simulate what you're going to get into. And just time on feet. That's all you can rely on. And then just, again, break that distance up in terms of, okay, I just did 3 miles. Okay, cool. Okay, I'm at mile 5. Just break that up. And next thing you know, you've done the distance. I mean, for me, I couldn't tell you when I was at 40 miles or at 100 miles. I was just running until I got to the finish line, right? And after that, okay, I'm done. Stop the watch and everything is lovely. Right. There's periods where you just really don't even remember crossing a marathon or, okay, I did 50, I'm at mile 50 or I'm at mile 80. Right. You just, you're just running. You're just taking it in segments. Right. Mm-hmm. And you have good moments and bad moments along the way. Right. You have moments of like, why am I doing this? What's going on? And you just have to remember the things of why you're doing it. Right. For me, very expensive trip. no way I'm going way down here to take an L, right? So I had to finish. There was no option in it. I had to finish. On top of our team lead mandating, hey, you guys work it out. I mean, it's the closest thing to the real world, like on MTV Real World, where people, six strangers come together to work on a common, literally like that, right? No one knew everybody. But through this, we all worked through the language barriers, worked through a common goal, and we were able to finish, and it was great.
Well, I mean, Dwayne, I mean, all you just said is kind of got a lot of my questions. Like, okay, yeah, that's a very expensive trip. You can't, kind of sounds like me at the New York City Marathon last time. Yeah, hey, I'm up here. I'm going to finish regardless. But let me just ask you this. So would you recommend this race to everyone, or is there only certain people you would say, hey, maybe this race isn't for you? What would you think?
I would recommend this race to individuals who have done, if you've done 50 milers or 100 milers, I would recommend this race. If you've done less than that, I wouldn't recommend it. And then on top of that, the race director, based off, you have to send in a bio, right? Mm-hmm. You have to send in a bio of your, there's a website called Ultra Sign Up. And on Ultra Sign Up, it keeps tabs of all your races. It's like a literally built-in resume of all your runs. And some runs aren't on there, but you have to show proof via website, right? So based off that, you know, it's race director discretion. And that'll, and plus on top of that, the race directors in the Ultra community, they know each other. They talk to each other. Like, hey, do you know this guy? You think he can da-da-da-da-da-da? Because if you ever notice, if you ever look at YouTube, anytime you get a medal at the end or buckle, it's always the race director giving it to somebody. Yeah. It's never just some random person, just here you go. It's always the race director, and they have a personal feel for what you can do. So I would recommend this race if you have a tough mindset. If you've done 100 milers, you could do this race but it's mostly, you know, and I only had 100 miler under my belt, but it just depends on how willing, how you're going to dig deep and look into yourself and to see if you can actually do it. You can actually do it if you will yourself through it and tone out to what's important, right? And focus on the end game and completing your goal. So mm-hmm. I would recommend the race. It's a tough race because of the elevation. I'd say because we live here in Atlanta, we're used to hills. So that's a good base, right? You know, hills, you just have to do more hills and have more time on your feet and be able to heat train. And, you know, you could be successful at this race. Logistically, it is a pricey race, right? Brazil is not around the corner. So you have to factor that in. I would recommend if you want to do the race, save a whole year before you act. Don't do it the same year, because look at it. The race is in January. But before January, you got December, which is Christmas. And in November, you got Thanksgiving. You got a lot of money flying around at that time, right? So if you're going to do this race, save for it. Just don't, it's January and then I'm going to show up next January. You have to save for it along the way, right? Cut out some of the costs that way. And then nickel and dime the best way you can. The dollar, the ratio is $1 American is like 5 reais. So you need to save accordingly. And you know, that fluctuates, right? And then one thing too, for me, one reason why I wanted to get in this race was it's a qualifying race for Western States.
Oh.
So Western, you know, for the folks that don't know, Western States is kind of like the Boston Marathon for the trail running.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to get into Western States, you have to run a qualifying race just to be able to throw your name into the lottery, right? You just can't even register. So for this race, if you completed the race in 120 hours, right, I did that, then you can put your name in the hat to be in the lottery for Western States, which is a 100-mile course, which takes place in Auburn, California, every June, I believe. So that was one primary reason why I entered this race, because it was a qualifying race.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you this. Beyond the race itself, did you, and you talked about a Brazilian barbecue, but in relation to the rest of Brazil, did you get to get around any, or was it more of, hey, came in, did the race, you know, and then I was out?
No. Yeah, we had time to go. We didn't go to Rio, but we went to Sao Paulo, saw some sights there. Mm. And then on top of that, we went to the various towns too, some of the bigger towns, the smaller towns, but Sao Paulo was the biggest town that we went through, but we did mm-hmm. see a lot of smaller towns along the way, but we weren't by the beach or by Rio de Janeiro or, you know, anything like that.
A couple of Cabana Beach. I'm sure when you told people, hey, I'm going to Brazil, and they were like, oh, really? And then you were like, to run 144 miles. They're like, yeah, that's not where I'm going to Brazil, but yeah. Okay.
How long were you there?
So we got there early. So we gave ourselves 2 days, the 8th, to get acclimated, right? Because you know, different environment, you know, elevation, et cetera, you always should give yourself time. And then the race started on the 11th. So we were there 2 days before, and we did a lot of sightseeing in those 2 days. We previewed the course, we went to some of the towns, ate some of the food, and then race day showed up, and then we took care of the race. And then after the race, we had like 1 day to see some more sites. So
mm-hmm.
we did.
Oh, well, yeah. It's a beautiful country. Like you said, beautiful people. I've been there. I wasn't running at the time, but yeah, beautiful country, great food. I mean, yeah, ridiculously good food.
It doesn't make any sense, man. if I could bring it back, I would. Okay. If you ever have a chance to eat that true Brazilian food, you would be like, it's rich. It's spicy. It has flavor. It really grabs onto you when you eat it. So it's very
well. And I mean, being from America, I think we are so used to even like what we would think of as authentic food, not just Brazilian, just authentic, still has that processed feel. Like, you go to other countries like Brazil, everything is like from scratch. Everything is like how your grandma used to make it. You know what I mean? So yes. I think that's another thing that you get when you go to these other countries.
Yes. And you don't have as much GI issues because of all that. Like, I never felt full. Like, when we went to Bali, I never felt full, bloated, like, just sleepy after I ate. Even though I ate a lot, I didn't feel any of that. And I think it was because it's not, it's farm to table, literally.
Exactly. Like, yeah, that's what I was trying to get. Yeah, that's exactly it.
That is it. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So
what's up next, Coach? What you got? I mean, I don't know how you can top 144 miles in, you know, middle of Brazil, but what you got next?
So right now I'm looking to, so I haven't ran in like 2 weeks. I'm giving myself sanity.
You need to
time.
Not run for like a month.
Yeah, it's pretty much gonna be a month. I already know it's gonna be a month. I'm not even, I don't even know what that is, right?
Yeah.
So, month off, right? And then my next thing is gonna be the Peachtree Road Race. I'm gonna go back to the road, start training for the Peachtree Road Race. And then after that, I got the race coming up for this half marathon, and I'm looking at a marathon later this year, and maybe another 100 miler later on as well. So okay. I'm not just grinding it out. I'm giving myself enough time to recover and just, you know, build up another training block, and then
you're being smart about it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh yeah. Gotta go long here.
Recoup the body, do what you need to do, soak in the victory that you did and the experience that you did, let the body recover, and then move into it. Because I'm pretty sure, like you mentioned several times, how mentally as well as physically, but mentally challenging it is. And I think sometimes we tend to underestimate the way that running can be so mentally challenging, and it can cause you to check out of it because you're mentally tired. But I think if you give yourself time to recover, soak in the experience, let your body recover, and don't go so much back to back to back to back to back, it allows you to do the sport in more of a long-term phase. Then I see more people that burn out because they race and do all the things back to back, but they're not allowing themselves to soak up the experience and recover their, not only their body, but also their mind. So kudos to you.
Exactly.
You definitely have to step back from it and find your love for it and your reasoning. And you have to, you just can't grind it out like that. You'll burn out.
For sure.
So Dwayne, go ahead and tell, you know, if anybody's listening that's heard your story is like, hey, you know, I want to do this. How would they find out about the race, get in touch with the race director, that sort of thing, so they can kind of try to move forward in that process?
Okay. So if you're interested in doing the race, you want to go to Brazil 135. Just do a Google search on that. It's Brazil135.net. And then on that site, when registration opens up again, you'll see a registration link. And once you register, it will put you in contact with the race director. They use WhatsApp heavily. There's a WhatsApp group since it's international.
So they
talk to all the runners through WhatsApp, and then you'll get more details on being able to register, talk to the race director, be assigned a particular team, a crew chief. And then once you start having side dialogue with your crew chief in terms of how many cars you need, how many runners are going to participate, your food needs, do you need a pacer? So you coordinate that with the crew chief, who's usually a local runner and who's tied to the race. It's never like you're just finding somebody randomly. And, you know, I would say even if you found someone there, if they don't know who they are, they probably would not let them in the race. One thing that's given to the runners. So the race director, who was a former in the Brazilian Navy, so he has something called a deck log, right? And in this deck log is like the history of all the participants who've participated in the race. And so what they do is they give this to the next group of individuals who come behind, so they have a written history of the race.
Oh, wow.
So any of the participants, they have contact information in here. So the past participants, you can talk to them. Or you can either be assigned a crew chief from one of the people that are the crew chiefs in this deck log that the race director has put together. Gotcha.
And next thing, go ahead and share with everyone. I mean, and you did the last time, but just share everyone with your social media stuff. So if they just want to follow your journey, whatever you got up next, how would they do that?
Yeah, so I'm primarily on Instagram. So I'm Coach D Scott on Instagram, or you can do a search on D19113. And so basically I post a lot of my journey there, everything from tips to food to you know, shoe reviews, shoes that I'm trying, you know, just various things to just try to get more people engaged and aware of, you know, having a diverse running environment. That's one of my biggest things, right? You know how people try to find themselves and what their niche is. I think one of my niches is making sure that I spread the love in terms of movement, some form of movement, and that's running. Some form of movement, and if you're a person of color, that you need to exercise and have good health. One of my major motivations was my father passed away from heart disease. So that was at 35, I'm 51 now, that was one of my things for why I should move in an athletic manner. So I try to encourage anybody I come across of color to do the same. That's one of my major motivations.
Hey, that's one of my, I mean, I'm not a big resolution person, but that was one of my resolutions this year. Because mostly I had always run and stayed in shape, but kids, you know, slow you down. Mm-hmm. And I said, I mean, regardless if I'm running as much as I used to, it doesn't matter. I still need to check on myself. So that's been one of my things this year. So, yeah, I totally agree with you. Brothers out there dropping like flies for no real reason.
No real reason at all. Yeah. Yep. I have someone that recently had something that happened to them like that. And it was very, very sad that happened.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. Indeedy. Well,
thank you so much.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, thank you so much. You gave a lot of detail about your experience. I'm pretty sure you had a plethora of other stories to provide because you were on the trails for a long period of time. So I'm sure there was a lot of experiences that took place, but we greatly appreciate you taking the time out of your day to talk to us and let us know the great things that you're doing out there. And again, congratulations on making history.
I will. We'll do. I'll keep you abreast and you'll be more entertained the next time around. So yes, I'll keep you fully, you know, Coach, you already know. I'll let you.
Yes, let me know.
All right. Well, thanks again, Dwayne. Thanks for being on the show again. As always, you're entertaining. And like India said, I mean, it's 144 miles. You probably got crazy, all kinds of stories. I was really thinking when you were talking about hallucinating, hey, I'm right there. Even on a marathon, I've had those times where I was like, what am I seeing something weird here? Is there a car coming? You know, so I completely understand.
I'll give you a quickie. So one hallucination, I was with my pacer. I literally put my arm around my pacer and I said, hold your arm out. Do you see this right here? He was like, no, I don't see anything. And so I tried to my pacer to participate in one of my hallucinations and that didn't work, right? So
It happens.
It happens.
That's the brain working. Well, definitely all of our listeners, definitely check out Dwayne. Go on over to him. Go over to his YouTube as well to get more information there. And we can't wait to see what you have next. I know you got some amazing things that are come up your sleeve, but thank you for sharing your experience with us.
Thank you guys so much. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.